That wasn't what I said. That's what you said I heard you say. Cool.
Mics are live now.
Mics are loud.
So, Patrick, particularly, do I just do this one for both days or what do I do?
Both days. Okay.
Let's go. $60 million.
Are we ready? Great school. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Kathy McEwen. I represent House District 9 on the South Coast and am vice chair of this committee. We are so delighted to be here today. I'd like to call into session this committee officially, the Joint Interim Committee on Transportation, Preservation, and Modernization, this June 29th, 2016, for the record. This meeting is being taped, so that's why we have microphones all over the place. So this will go on the permanent record for the legislature. The first thing I would like to do is, you have a lot of faces up here. Some may be familiar and others not. So I'd like to, believe I'll start with Senator Edwards, do just a brief introduction about who you are and where you're from so you all know who we are.
Sure. Briefly, my name is Chris Edwards. I'm a state senator and I represent about two-thirds of Eugene and Junction City in the Oregon Senate.
Rod Monroe, State Senator, District 24, Outer Portland and Northern Clackamas County, and I've been in government since I was first elected to the legislature in 1976. You can do the math.
Jackie Winner, State Senator of District 10. District 10 includes parts of South Salem, West Salem, Almsville, Turner, Monmouth, and Independence.
Betsy Johnson, State Senator from District 16, Northern Tillamook County, Clatsop, Columbia, a little bit of Washington, and Multnomah in the working waterfront.
Brian Boquist, State Senator, District 12, portions of six rural counties in Western Oregon.
Lee Byer, State Senator, representing Central Lane and Linn counties.
Kathy McEwen, House District 9, Coos Bay, Reedsport, Florence, Yahats, Mapleton, five voters in Elmira, Swiss Home, and Deadwood, and a little tiny bit of Scottsburg.
Cliff Benz, State Representative from District 60, that includes Ontario, Burns, John Day, parts of Lakeview, the best parts of Lakeview, and other parts in the east.
My name is John Lively. I'm from House District 12, which is the city of Springfield.
It's good to be home. Hi, I'm Greg Smith, District 57, Milton Freewater, Hermiston, Stanfield, Umatilla, which are the very best parts of Umatilla County, sorry, Pendleton, Morrow County, Gillum County, Sherman County, and the very, very best parts of Wasco County. We're glad you're here.
My name is Susan McLean, and I'm the representative from West Washington County, which is Forest Grove, Cornelius, and West Hillsboro.
I'm Andy Olson from Albany.
I'm Barbara Smith Warner from Northeast Portland.
Good afternoon. I'm Tina Kotek. I represent North and Northeast Portland, home of the I-5 Bridge into Vancouver, and I am the Speaker of the Oregon House. Thank you for being here today.
We have a lot of people who want to speak today, and we're going to open our comments with Representative Greg Smith, and we're delighted to be in your district, Representative Smith. This is our fourth meeting. We started in Salem with a meeting. We met in East Portland. Yesterday we were in Ontario, so you're number four on our list of, I believe, nine total or ten total. So we're not quite halfway through our summer travel schedule, but I'm honored to be here. And I'll just turn it over to Representative Smith to start us off.
Wonderful. Thank you, Madam Co-Chair and Mr. Co-Chair. Senator Monroe, I want to share with you, when you started in government, I was a Wolf Scout in Cub Scouts. I want to start off my comments by, first of all, thanking the Speaker of the House for bringing this committee to Umatilla County and to Hermiston. For those of you who don't know, especially all of our friends from District 57, this is actually the third time the Speaker has been out to Eastern Oregon in, gosh, what, about a month or so? Okay. And I think that says a lot about her commitment to Eastern Oregon and to paying attention to the issues that are important to us. So thank you, Madam Speaker. I want to share with you that I've been in the legislature for 16 years, eight terms. And when I started out, I had a full set of hair, and my kids were little. And the Port of Morrow and the Port of Umatilla and Hermiston We're just starting to think about what growth was really, really going to look like. And through collective effort of everyone working together, the ports and the cities and the counties and the special districts, they've come together and they've really created some phenomenal communities. And the same situation has occurred in Gillam and Sherman and Wasco counties. I share that with you because one of the things I've observed throughout my travels throughout the state of Oregon is quite often communities are still fighting over what color the dugout's going to be on the Little League field. And investments don't always get made correctly, they don't get utilized correctly, and sometimes there's some waste. That's not the case here. Over the last eight terms, you folks have been very, very gracious in supporting economic development in this area. And as a result, some many, many good things have occurred. Now, we're here to talk about a transportation package. I want to go on the record and share with you, I'm excited about this opportunity. I think if we collectively put our brains together and we listen to the citizens throughout the state of Oregon and we collect those very best ideas, and if we're all willing to compromise a little bit, if we're all willing to give a little bit, and I believe that we can create a package that all Oregonians can support. I want to share with you that I know how important it is to repair and to widen and to fix Interstate 205. Anyone who's been at Clackamas Town Center at 3 in the afternoon on a Friday knows it's a nightmare. I stand ready to support work at the Port of Portland and Interstate 5. Anyone who's tried to cross the bridge, and I'm not going to bring that subject up today, but anyone who's tried to cross the bridge in Portland at 4 o'clock in the afternoon knows what a nightmare it is. I had a chance a week or so ago to look at Powell Boulevard. Powell Boulevard, for my friends here, may not know it, but it's a major street that connects Gresham all the way to Portland. And it was really interesting. It's a two-way highway with no sidewalks. Children were walking around everywhere. Folks were driving 45 miles an hour. It's amazing to me that there weren't more accidents, more catastrophe, all that that goes with those type of issues. I'm prepared to support that. What I also want to share with you is that I want to create a package, a transportation package that's fair for the entire state of Oregon. Yesterday we heard from Representative Bentz about his need for an intermodal transfer facility. That's important for that community, and I stand ready to try and work to support that. Now there's going to be opposition from folks. There's going to be folks who say we can't do a transportation package. We can't raise revenue. Oh my goodness, you know, the Port of Morrow's already got enough stuff going on. Let's leave them alone. What I would share with you is we need to set those thoughts aside and figure out how do we work together. And I want you to know District 57 stands ready to partner with you on that. Last thought I want to share with you. There's going to be conversations on revenue. And again, I want to remind folks who don't know this, I've served on Ways and Means for 16 years. I know that that budget currently is $72 billion. And I know that there's a lot of intricacy that goes into that budget, and there's a lot of questions. We collectively need to be able to look at all sources of generating revenue, because not only do roads need to be taken care of, but so does transit, and so do intermodal facilities, and so do rail issues, and so do aviation issues. And if we get stuck on one source of revenue, we can't take care of all those projects. Okay. It's going to take different sources of revenue to collectively fix Oregon's transportation needs. The very, very last thing I want to share with you is as we look at transportation needs, this is just a moment in time. Okay. The needs of Oregonians are going to continue to grow. The population of Oregon is going to continue to grow. It's going to continue to change. And we need to make sure that we're thinking with some foresight and recognize that this is a moment in time, but we're going to need to continue to address transportation issues into the state. And I think this committee needs to think in that manner as well. We're glad you're here in District 57. We really appreciate you coming out here. It really says a lot to us that you care enough about Eastern Oregon that you would take time out of your day to come visit with us. There's a lot of good folks here, a lot of smart folks here, a lot of smart folks. You're going to hear from them today. I hope you'll listen carefully to what they have to share, and I think you're going to find that we're ready to partner with you. Thank you for having me here, Madam Co-Chair and Madam Speaker. Thank you for allowing us this to occur.
Thank you, Representative Smith. We have a constrained amount of time. which is common for us who sit on committees in the legislature. So what we are going to do is bring the invited testimony up in three panels. Panel one is Commissioner Givens, Dr. Drotzman, and Ms. Pedro. Please, you can all just come up and grab a seat. And we're getting some feedback here. We messed with the tables. We may have interfered with the speaker system, so if we did, we'll apologize. What we'd like to do is have you take about 4 minutes each. Patrick will be actually manning a timer so we stay on track so that everybody has an opportunity to get their important comments across. So in any order you choose, please.
I will yield to Mayor Drossman, the mayor of the city of Hermiston.
Thank you. First of all, I want to.
Presentation.
I do have
Give
a presentation.
Give me a high sign because I need to tell someone up in the
ether
that there's a. Okay,
but if you want to see the PowerPoint, it's behind you. We also gave you some handouts if you would prefer not to turn around and see the PowerPoint.
Great.
So thank you very much. I echo.
Thank you for the record, sir.
I'm sorry. I'm Dr. Dave Drotzman. I'm the mayor of the city of Hermiston.
Thank you so much.
Good afternoon, and again, thank you. I want to echo what Representative Smith said. It really means a lot and says a lot about you all come out to Eastern Oregon and hear what our concerns are, and we appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedules to do so. First of all, I do want to brag a little bit about our new brand. We just launched a new brand this spring. This is a public presentation with it. We're pretty proud of it. I just wanted to recognize that. Hermiston, where life is sweet, kind of a play on our watermelons. Hermiston watermelons are known throughout the world as being some of the best. We brought a couple gifts for you today. Those are fresh out of the field this morning. Please feel free to take those home with you today. My friends at Bellinger Farms brought those in today for you to share with you to take home. They're a little early. They're probably not as good as the end of July, where our watermelons are the sweetest, but they're probably better than anything you can find in the local markets that you have close to your homes. ODOT's been a great partner with us in the past, and I want to thank you for your partnership on the 395 modernization project. Our compliments go to your contractors. There was very little impact to businesses in our community in that project, and it's a major thoroughfare through the community. We also have partnered with you in a stoplight in a major intersection around our hospital where the city and a local private partner and the state have come together to improve that, and we want to thank you. Your partnerships in the past have been excellent. I'm going to try and breeze through this presentation. My time is 1 minute shorter than I thought it was going to be, so I may go a little long. Hopefully you'll excuse me. Just for reference, you know, we happen to be one of the fastest growing areas in the state. Over the last few decades, you know, Hermiston has grown to the largest city in Eastern Oregon. The greater Hermiston area, including North Morrill County and greater Hermiston, population is 45,000 people. Those people visit and do jobs and buy their goods in Hermiston, visit our restaurants here in Hermiston. 395 and Highway 207 is the busiest intersection in Eastern Oregon. It happens to be in downtown Hermiston. Our residents and businesses expect and demand all modes of transportation. And although receiving funds for one mode does allow us to shift some money around to help pay for costs of other modes, the simple fact is that we can't keep up with all of our demands ourselves. So, am I pointing in the right direction? So I want to use it as an example. One of the challenges that we've run into is first place. This is just north of the high school here. Every afternoon around 3 o'clock, traffic stacks up like this because many people in the community use first place as an alternative to avoid congestion on Highway 395. You can note the car on the right. That's part of an actual made-up second lane. The intersection in particular is a problem because you can see on the left is our fire and police department. There have actually been times where there's been an emergency during this time frame and fire crews have had to go out and direct traffic and run opposite of traffic in order to get out to an emergency. This potentially creates problems with life and life-saving opportunities. So just on that first place intersection alone, we have nearly $7 million in need to meet that demand. To signalize two new intersections, repave, widen, and add pedestrian facilities to more than a mile of roadway. But of course, we can't fully afford any of those projects without some state assistance. We proposed a multimodal expansion of that, and where we broke it down into smaller pieces, repaving and widening about half of the street, adding sidewalks and pedestrian pathways to both sides of the portions of the street. We presented the $3 million proposal to ODOT for enhanced funding because it will help congestion problems off of Highway 395 and 207. But we quickly found out that streets do not apply, only pedestrian facilities. So we continued to apply for funding. And for the pedestrian parts of the aspect, $800,000 for that. But what happens when everyone is forced to do the same funding dance is that we had nearly identical applications from three other communities, just in our area alone. So even though there's only $3 million in enhanced funds for all of Region 5, just in the greater Hermiston area, we had $5.6 million in requests. Needless to say, Hermiston didn't make the cut line. We also have some other significant major projects that need to be addressed on our TSP. The top 10 I'm going to talk through really briefly. Again, the first place enhancement, $5 million project. I'm running out of time. We have some significant improvements that need to happen. We can't fund it without your help and support. If we were to go out and try and fund these projects on our own, it would take us 143 years. Just the first place facility alone would take us 30 years. So we're looking for partnerships with the city or with the state. We're not asking for you to fund the whole $43 million. We're asking that you partner with us. We have great relationships with our county and our port, helping us to find ways that we can leverage monies locally with state money to help us accomplish those projects. Just look how successful the school projects have been, where you were able to leverage some money this last year and help schools get built. You know, something similar to that where communities have some flexibility with their dollars would be appropriate. Again, thank you. Please enjoy your watermelons. We appreciate you coming to Eastern Oregon. Want to come back next July or this July and have some of the sweetest watermelons in the area. We'd appreciate giving you some more. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Drotzman. Ms. Pedro?
Thank you. My name is Debbie Pedro. I'm the CEO of the Hermiston Chamber of Commerce, and welcome co-chairs and committee members, and especially our representative Greg Smith that you work with here on this committee. And as well, it's great to see the Speaker of the House here today. So many of you I recognize and thankful that you came to Hermiston. Thanks for the opportunity. First of all, you know, I wanted to share with you about how fortunate we are here in Hermiston to have great leadership within our community. There are excellent partners here in Hermiston, and they all have a vision of working together and making things happen here in our region. Many of them you'll probably hear from today, and they are here today, most of them. And I'm just going to list a few of those partners that we enjoyed working with. Representative Greg Smith, the City of Hermiston, Umatilla County, Good Shepherd Healthcare Systems, Umatilla Electric, Eastern Oregon Telecom, our ports, Hermiston School District, and of course the Chamber. It's our pleasure to have you here today. I hope that you will enjoy the gifts that we brought you here today. And again, this is sporting, you know, our new brand here for Hermiston. Well, our goal here is to keep pace with local and regional development. Recently, we completed several transportation projects that I believe you will see as part of your tour, but I would like to share a few of the items with you that we're currently investing in. Last year, the city received $300,000 from Connect Oregon to upgrade our airport taxiway. We were able to leverage these dollars along with the city funds to obtain FAA dollars, achieving the $3.8 million of funding needed. The project not only sets us up for future expansions, but will also allow us to service more aircraft with fuel and to continue to serve the large corporate jet traffic that uses the airport to access their businesses in Hermiston, Umatilla, and Boardman. Currently, the Hermiston Airport has over 30,000 takeoffs and landings annually, and that continues to rise. The city and ODOT are partnering to install new traffic signals and additional turn lanes at Elm and 11th, also known as Highway 207, located by the hospital. In addition to this, being a trucking route for local producers to move their products to the processing plants on the edge of town, the hospital itself is in the middle of several large expansion projects, which will result in 50 new full-time jobs. by offering $800,000 in ODOT Immediate Opportunity Funds. They were able to improve their system and leverage an additional $800,000 from the city and the hospital. I thought that was pretty neat. Here is an example of something that we need your help with. There's a parcel of land that follows South Highway 395. It is south of Best Western Hotel and the Denny's Restaurant. That parcel of land is extremely desirable, and EOTech was just built in that area, as well as our airport is also in that same area. ODOT requires investors to put in a frontage road there, and that can be very costly. If an investment in the road is made, then we can open it up for future development. So when we improve on our infrastructure, it helps our communities grow across the state. It is projects like these that attract new business, provide opportunities for existing businesses, and helps business grow. Ultimately, it creates jobs. Best wishes today as you guys make your way through our community and you make important decisions for our state and our communities, providing funding for projects that help businesses move commerce and communities move forward is a top priority of ours. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Commissioner Gibbons.
Well, again, I don't want to be redundant in my comments today.
Your name for the record, sir.
I'm sorry. Commissioner Larry Gibbons, Umatilla County, also the president of AOC and serving on a number of other committees. So I'll be using Umatilla County hat and also representing Association of Oregon Counties and NEAC also as chair of that. Again, not trying to be redundant, but first of all, let me thank you for being here. Speaker Kotek, again, thank you so much for being here today and co-chair of the co-chairs of our of the committee today. Transportation has been an item that you have wrestled with and we as communities have wrestled with, and it's been something that is extremely important across the state. We know that. We can't get by without a good transportation package. Everything that happens on the eastern side of the county provides goods and services transported to the west side of, or eastern side of the state to the west side of the state. And that's really important. I have to say thank you, though, in part to a lot of the infrastructure that the state and legislators like yourselves have provided. Our EOTech project that the state has helped funded, the water projects, a lot of the highway projects. So here in Umatilla County, in this part of the state, we have been fortunate. But that doesn't mean the work needs to stop. There will always be needs. Your task ahead of you is great. I know Senator Monroe had mentioned, I think you said almost, well, I won't mention the years, but years in government and wrestling for many years over a transportation package that is hugely important. And I'm trying to kind of hit a broad spectrum here. I have to say thank you for the help you've given rural counties already, but I also have to say thank you for the partnerships we've shared with Representative Smith that has gone to bat for us many times, has really helped out at getting some projects done in Umatilla County, but also in this region. I would be remiss if I didn't also publicly say thanks to a couple individuals that are not here today. I know Senator Hansel has been very instrumental in bringing some projects, and Representative Greg Barreto has stepped up also, and I know working very closely with you folks on that. As I said earlier, Monday meeting with Governor Brown, and some of her concerns and sharing them with AOC. Again, I would reiterate a big concern about the infrastructure needs across our state, especially in the light of resiliency in a catastrophic event, be it an earthquake, Cascadia, or be it some of the fires we've had over this past year, and a likelihood of those happening again in the near future, again this summer possibly. But infrastructure is extremely important, and being able to recover from some of those events means a great deal to our communities. So again, not to go on that what I mentioned earlier at lunch today, I have to say thank you all for the job you do. It's a huge task, and you have a lot of asks before you of where will the money come from and who will get the money. Again, thank you.
Great. Thank you, Commissioner. Next up, we have representatives from the Port of Umatilla, the Port of Morrow, the Port of the Dalles, and the Port of Arlington. And while we're changing panels, I want to make sure that we acknowledge in the room today we have the governor's representative for transportation, Carmen Four. Carmen, are you still here somewhere? Over here. And I believe we have our Oregon Transportation Commission Chair, Tammy Bailey. So, Tammy, thank you for joining us today. Gentlemen, in any order you choose.
Go ahead.
I think we're missing a are we? Okay, go ahead and get started. That's fine.
Do you want me to begin? Okay.
That would be fine.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I'm Kim Pusey, General Manager of the Port of Umatilla, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here. It's nice to see you again, Co-Chair McCaughan.
Nice to see you, yeah, sir.
Appreciate it.
Last we crossed paths, it was in Keelung Harbor in Taiwan.
a former port connection. Always good to see my great friend, Representative Smith. Nice to see you again, Speaker Kotek. And Senator Johnson, always nice to see you. Thank you for all the work you've done on our behalf. I always like to, I guess my default setting is to do a historical perspective on why we're together here, and if you don't mind, if you'll indulge me in that.
As long as you do it in the time frame allotted, we're fine.
I can do that. So I want to, last week I was outside of the U.S. Treasury and saw the statue there of Albert Gallatin, you know, as the Secretary of the Treasury under President Jefferson. And because of their work together, the government funded the Lewis and Clark expedition, and they began looking at infrastructure possibilities in a new nation. The Cumberland Gap became the Cumberland Way. The Erie Canal led from the Hudson River to the Great Lakes that connected us to the Missouri and Mississippi system all the way to New Orleans. Independence, Missouri, which led to the exploration and settlement of the American West and so forth. Fast forward half a century, we're up to the Intercontinental Railroad, which was the next best form of transportation after waterway transportation and the infrastructure that had been addressed there. Another half century, we're up to 1905. You'll remember that the Congress of Governors met together after a century of putting infrastructure in this new country and said, what should we do with respect to dredging and maintenance and preservation and conservation, the same things we're looking at today. 100 years later, I heard Senator Blumenauer begin to talk about should we revisit this again at the century point in 2005. And he, with the late Jim Oberstar, great champion of federal infrastructure from Minnesota, dearly miss him and all the work that they did together, bring us to a time where we're looking at what are we going to do in the state of Oregon. Now, I'd be remiss if we didn't talk about what happened in 1890, the birth of Dwight Eisenhower. In 1905, when the Congress of Governors met, and he was 15 years old. In 1916, he was 26, a junior officer in the Army, was asked to bring vehicles and soldiers across the country. Took 60 days to do that, which we all know led to the interstate highway system when, after having completed his work as the Allied commander of the Supreme Commander of the Allied Forces, got elected as President of the United States, we did the interstate highway system, and so now we're here today. I love all things infrastructure. highways, byways, roadways, walkways, airways, every pipe and wire, you know, I love all of that stuff. I like the fact that we're addressing Flint, Michigan, clean water, wastewater, pipes, wires that need to be addressed in the trillions of dollars, bridges, trestles, tunnels, all of that. So I have, you can tell, some passion about infrastructure. How we can fund this, we have taxation with representation. If my representative says, I'm going to tax you this way, this much, I'm in. I'm in for that. I have that kind of trust in him, and I have that kind of trust in this collective body to be able to say to the people of Oregon, this is what you need, this is what it's going to cost. We've laughed about a dollar a gallon gasoline, dollar a gallon, and I know that it doesn't address everything, but a dollar a gallon. Now, if you could somehow blend those funds, we get public transportation taken care of. Instead of a two twice-a-day call at Irrigan, you get every hour, that kind of thing. We met in the port of Keelung on our way to the port of Kaohsiung on a 300-mile-an-hour bullet train. I'm embarrassed to live in a country that is this progressive and this wealthy and this smart, and we have such backward transportation systems, and I could go on and on and on. Thank you all. If somebody's transcribing this, please do the verb subject agreement, and just assume that I use the Oxford comma.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Nicely done.
Co-chair, senators, representatives, Ron McInnes, Portamoral. When Portamoral was called, I was confused. I said, I wonder who's representing the port today.
I think it's you, sir.
I guess it was me. And I'm not going to be as much history, obviously, than Kim. But, you know, the port has been very progressive in the 20-plus years I've been there. I've seen it grow from a hayfield into a pretty productive industrial park. And to the port, transportation isn't just a road. It's a waterway, it's a rail. It's just like Kim said, it's everything that transports something. It's not just a person in a car that's moving. It's a commodity, it's a liquid. It's many things, and I know I don't envy your task in trying to find a way to fund all of those different modes of transportation. And in a lot of cases, just like in Ontario, those modes of transportation have to commingle. And that's what really happens at the port. People create a product, and that product comes in and it goes back out. And it comes in by many means and it goes out by many means. And I know that we have a lot of needs, and I know that we've been very successful. And we've been successful because we've partnered with ODOT and we've been partnered with you, our representatives. And it's been a very successful story over my tenure. And I thank you for that.
Thank you, sir, for being here. Welcome.
Hi, thank you. My name is Peter Mitchell. I represent the Port of Arlington. I'm the port manager / economic development officer and other duties as assigned. Thank you all very much for being here. We work with other ports a lot. Kim is a colleague of mine. Portamoral is. We collaborate on a lot of things. So it's good to hear a history lesson from Kim. And I just wanted to piggyback a little bit on that, in that ports are part of a system. And here in eastern Oregon, the crops come out of the blues. They have to make their way down to the river. And from the river, they go down to the Port of Portland, where they're shipped into the international markets. So this linkage is very important to the ports. And this intermodal that everybody has been talking about, and all the infrastructure that Kim mentioned, is very important to ports. We have to have good county roads to get the crops to our elevators at our ports. We need good barge loading terminals to get the barges loaded up. Rail serves a big component. In Arlington, we have one of the few rail spurs off the Class 1 main line. We've invested a lot of money in that. Connect Oregon's been a huge help with that. We need those kind of funds. Last year it was a 30% match, and it was a little tough for us to do that kind of a match. So please do take a look at that. But the Connect Oregon is just a wonderful tool that we have to work with to do a lot of these intermodal projects that make these linkages smooth. And as my colleagues mentioned, if we need to invest in infrastructure badly as a country, we're going to get left behind in the world market. Any place that we don't have good, efficient linkages and bottlenecks that aren't smoothed out, we're going to get left in the dust in the world market that we live in. And Oregon's a very big player in the world market, and the ports are a big piece of that. So thank you very much for being here.
Gentlemen, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
I'd like to call up our next panel, Port of Hood River, Kayak Transit, and Port of Cascade Locks. Welcome.
Thank you, Co-Chair McKeown. My name is Genevieve Scholl, and I'm the Special Projects Manager for the Port of Hood River, which owns and operates the Hood River White Salmon Interstate Bridge, as well as the Hood River Airport Marina, and develops industrial and mixed-use land. I want to thank you for your endeavor to travel around our state and hear about our local transportation priorities and for your attention today. I especially want to thank Representative Smith for accommodating out-of-district ports and for our sister ports for the inspiration they provide for their excellent work in economic development. The Port of Hood, the Hood River Bridge provides the only Columbia River crossing within a 42-mile radius of Hood River, connecting I-84, Oregon Highways 35 and 30 to Washington State Route 14. Over 4 million vehicles crossed the bridge last year. Originally constructed in 1924, parts of the steel truss bridge are 92 years old, and most of the rest of it is over 80. The bridge is structurally deficient with a sufficiency rating of 49.8. Conceived well before modern vehicle and marine freight configurations, the bridge has very narrow, shoulderless travel lanes of only 9 feet, 4.75 inches, and is weight limited to 80,000 pounds. On the water, the 246-foot horizontal clearance under the bridge's lift span is poorly aligned and hazardous for barge tows navigating the federal waterway. Our bridge is known to have been struck more often than all other obstacles in the entire river system. During the June 3rd oil train derailment in nearby Mosier, the bridge accommodated detoured freeway traffic in both directions and created a choke point that backed up traffic for miles in all directions, all the way to our sister port, the Port of Cascade Locks, this Bridge of the Gods. On both sides of the river, we were backing up traffic as large trucks and emergency response vehicles had to negotiate each other in their crossing within inches of each other in both directions throughout the 12-hour closure. As the bridge nears the end of its serviceable life, the port is seeking a path toward construction of a new replacement bridge. Since 1999, a multi-jurisdictional effort has resulted in a completed draft EIS and a type, size, and location study, a benefit-cost analysis showing a 4-to-1 benefit to cost ratio for the replacement project was completed this year in preparation for a fast lane application. Also this year, with the help of ODOT, the bridge was designated as part of the National Highway System. Near-term steps toward bridge replacement are identified as the number one priority of our region's comprehensive economic development strategy and is included in the TSPs of both Hood River and Klickitat counties. As a toll facility owned by a public partner, open and willing to do whatever it takes to ensure this critical link in our state's transportation system remains unbroken, This project is a great example, I think, of the kinds of projects your committee might be excited to hear about. With tremendous unified local support and buy-in and commitment in developing real funding partnerships with both states and the federal government, as well as potential P3 public-private partnerships. The Port is looking forward to working with your committee and legislators, ODOT, and the Governor's Office to support a large funding package for Oregon in 2017. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I would defer to the lady at the end.
Thank you. I'm Janine Gordon, Public Transit Program Manager for Kayak Public Transit, Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation. The Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation is a union of Cayuse, Umatilla, and Walla Walla tribes with over 3,000 tribal members, near half of whom live on or near the reservation near Pendleton, Oregon. Our livelihood depends on safe and sustainable transportation that connects our community with the region and the state of Oregon. We welcome the state of Oregon's focus on a transportation funding package in 2017 and wish to highlight areas of particular concern. Investments in public transit are critically needed in Eastern Oregon. The CTUIR operates Kayak Public Transit, which transports tribal and non-tribal community members throughout the region by providing fixed route services between two states, four counties, and 17 communities. Public transportation is a vital lifeline in rural Oregon. Our riders are workers, seniors, people with disabilities, and families. Transit allows our community members to safely get to work, school, college, healthcare facilities, public service agencies, and other essential goods and services. Public transportation provides quality of life to many rural residents who do not have personal transportation and need access to public services and healthcare. Umatilla County has a median household income nearly $5,000 under the median household income of Multnomah County. Kayak Public Transit provides an economic boost to the communities we serve. The money our riders save on fuel and vehicle wear and tear is spent at places of businesses in our local communities. Likewise, transit reduces the number of vehicles on the road and allows for improved freight mobility. Kayak Public Transit provides a safe transportation option for commuters and passengers who would normally travel by car on rural roads and highways, thereby decreasing vehicle congestion and the accident probability rate. We need additional funding to sustain and grow the transportation system that our communities rely on to survive and thrive. Increased funding would allow Kayak to reestablish service between Umatilla, Oregon, and Tri-Cities, Washington, connect service between Irrigan and the Dalles, which would allow people to get from Portland all the way to our area in Eastern Oregon, provide transportation for employees to and from the Port of Morrow, where there is a severe housing shortage, allow even more transportation options, economic boosts, environmental benefits, and ultimately community value to rural Eastern Oregon. Our public transit system was named Kayak as a reference to the Cayuse Nez Perce word Kayak, which means to be free of obstructions. We believe that transportation in our region will continue to improve with the state's investment in transit, infrastructure, and safety improvements. In our accompanying material, we have outlined some additional infrastructure and safety improvements needed in our region, along with some more information on Kayak. We are glad that some of you were able to ride one of our buses this morning from Port of Umatilla to Hermiston here. And thank you for your time and interest in improving transportation in Eastern Oregon.
Thank you, Ms. Gordon. And just so you all know, if you have written testimony, you're welcome to submit it to be entered into the record. If you want to take your comments and shorten them a little bit, our next set of panelists will have 3 minutes. So I'm just giving you a little heads up that if you want to shorten them up, you can submit your written public testimony over here at the table. Can you raise your hand? Who's taking the written testimony? Yeah. just handed in to her, and then it will be entered into the public record as well. Welcome, sir.
Thank you very much. We appreciate, legislators, you being here. I think many of us just appreciate you taking the time from your personal lives to travel around the state and listen. My name is Paul Cook. I'm the general manager of the Port of Cascade Locks. Cascade Locks is the first bridge east of 205. It is one of the first bridges to plug up when 9 million people come out of Portland every summer to enjoy the beautiful Columbia River Gorge, and we take the hit. So if you think you have traffic congestion in Portland, you haven't seen anything until a Friday afternoon or a weekend in Cascade Locks. In 2013, we went through a weight limitation when the federal government required the state of Oregon to close the Bridge of the Gods. Thank God for ODOT, we were able to get that project to bring the bridge back to 80,000 pounds, funded by money we discovered with ODOT, and a four-year project that would have cost $4 million was done because ODOT threw 152 of their employees in. It was done in 4 months for $1.2 million. So as legislators, don't tell us it can't be done quicker and for less, because we know different. Cascade Locks is inside the National Scenic Area. The National Scenic Area is a federal construct that is tied together by legal agreements between both states. We need you as legislators to follow through on your commitment to the National Scenic Area. There are federal funds allocated because of the hard work of Jamie Herrera Butler, Greg Walden, Ron Wyden, and a few dozen others from both states. Section 1105 of the FAST Act actually names National Scenic Areas and provides $1 billion discretionary funds for bundled projects. You could build a new bridge in Hood River, fix the bridge in Cascade Locks, put in a few intersections, pay back Cascade Locks, who got bypassed when the I-84 freeway went in. There's no easy, effective, efficient way to get into the business park, and we don't think a $120 million interchange, as was talked about 15 years ago, does it. We have some different solutions. Cascade Locks has 19% unemployment in one of the lowest unemployment counties in the state. In the last 3 years, we have developed 60 new jobs, and we're on the verge of having 1,200 more come to town. We have a 10-year bridge maintenance and preservation plan that we need your help to fund. We can tell you exactly what needs to be done over the next 10 years. We are working with the Columbia Gorge Commission to create a set of transportation priorities for the National Scenic Area that we think you as legislators should pay attention to. You are required by federal law and your own contract with the state of Washington, so we hope that you will do that. And that ends my presentation, and thank you very much again.
Thank you, sir. Questions for this panel?
I don't have a question. I just have just a brief comment. I have not seen Mr. Cook in so many years. We worked together, and I won't say how many, 40-some-odd years ago.
Well, Jackie, I'm 107 now, so that'll give you some idea.
During the McCall administration, so.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
That concludes our invited testimony for this afternoon. Now we're going to move into our public testimony. And Patrick has done some calculations, and we can get everybody up to the table to testify if we keep it to 3 minutes. So our first panel consists of Frenell, Amy Perry, Andy Perry, and Robert Waldner, please. Welcome, sir.
Madam Co-Chair and Mr. Co-Chair, Madam Speaker, my name is Joe Frenell. I'm the General Manager and CEO of Eastern Oregon Telecom. I'm also on the Board of Directors for the Hermiston Chamber of Commerce, and I chair your Broadband Advisory Council. So some of you, I think, have seen me testify, and this is the first time I've gotten to testify outside of Salem, and this is fun. I like it, so we should do this more often. So in that vein, I'd like to thank you all for being here and for all of the investments that you've made in our area over the years. They have made a significant difference. The impact has been significant on our economy and on livability here in Eastern Oregon. So thank you very much. I also want to share how marvelous it is to have Representative Smith involved in this discussion. I find the area's belief in him and support of him remarkable. His service to our area has allowed us to develop relationships that create sustainable focus for the future. It's made it easy for the businesses, chambers of commerce in the area, local and county governments, and ports to work together. I know that's a rare thing, and but I have to testify to you that's the case here. And I think that's why we're able to accomplish so much here with your help. We do it together. Now, in wearing my hat as the chairman of the Oregon Broadband Advisory Council, I think that it's important that I recommend, as you do all of these considerations, and I'm not asking for money, I just think that we should consider including in the transportation discussion broadband infrastructure. Broadband infrastructure reduces traffic on the highways, it reduces our carbon footprint, it allows people to do business globally and attend meetings electronically and virtually. And as we're looking at all of the challenges that I've already heard about on several of the panelists that we've heard from, one less car, one less truck every day makes a difference. And so don't forget fiber infrastructure in particular, but broadband in general, as we look at how we meet the needs for transportation for the state for the future. And I appreciate you giving me an opportunity to chat with you today. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Perry.
Opportunity to be here. Co-chairs, committee, my name is Andy Perry. I represent Anderson Perry & Associates. We are a civil engineering and transportation firm based in La Grande, Oregon. We employ approximately 60 people in Oregon and have been providing engineering services out in Eastern Oregon for over 40 years. I am here today to, again, echo the voice of many who have preceded me with encouraging the committee to support and develop a significant and sustainable transportation package for both ODOT, local agencies, and other multimodal providers. Every day, or as we work closely with local agencies and ODOT, as engineers, we do understand the ever-increasing cost of prolonging making the repairs and performing the maintenance that needs to happen to our transportation infrastructure. It isn't a linear cost, it is exponential, and the longer we wait, the longer or the more it will cost. As taxpayers, we also understand that that will come to a burden to us to help support that. We understand that money doesn't grow on trees and that you don't just magically make it up or print it. So we also support that and understand the need for it. And again, appreciate the time that you've taken to come out here, listen to us, and for your interest and support. So thank you.
Thank you, sir. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. My name is Robert Walder. I'm a senior planner with the Umatilla County Planning Department. If it would be all right with you guys, I'd like to actually invite my co-presenters up here. I think there's a little miscommunication on the order of presentation. But I do have a PowerPoint to share with you today. I don't have a printout, but I also have brought a one-page leave behind to leave with you. I understand you may be going on a tour this afternoon, so I hope you will find that helpful. The Highway 395 North Development Project is a economic development project that started from a group of stakeholders, local business owners and landowners along the Highway 395 North corridor. They came to the county and asked, what can we do to improve the economic development along this corridor, make it more viable to development, but at the same time make it more aesthetically pleasing? So they came to the county. We put together a grant application to the Department of Land Conservation and Development and were successful. And we hired an economist to come out, interview the stakeholders, see what could be done in terms of redevelopment of this industrial and commercially zoned corridor, which is in unincorporated Umatilla County. So if you're familiar with the area, it's between the Umatilla urban growth boundary and the city of Hermiston urban growth boundaries. So based off the recommendations of the plan, we looked at several things. One of the things is zoning modifications, but also infrastructure improvements. So looking at the roadway, what could be done to improve safety and freight mobility? As many of you know, this area is a very heavily utilized truck corridor connecting Interstate 84 to the Port of Umatilla Highway 730 area. We also looked at water and wastewater infrastructure improvements. Since it's in an unincorporated part of the county, there isn't a domestic water supply. So we've been looking at what can be done to get a domestic water supply to the area. As I mentioned, looking at aesthetic improvements, implementing some design standards to improve the look of the corridor, and then hopefully in the long term, 10 to 20 years as the corridor develops, looking at annexation into the city. But what we're really here to talk about today is the roadway improvements that were recommended from the plan. And part of that is a off-system truck route adjacent to Highway 395 North. If you see up there on the map, Highway 395 runs kind of diagonal north-south. We're looking, a project that we've identified is the Bagot Lane Improvement Project. And Steve's gonna highlight a little bit about that. But this project has been identified in our transportation system plan, also a 1995 corridor study, which interestingly enough, also identified signalization at Theater Lane, Pumpkin Center, Bagot Lane, and Bensel Road. Two of those currently do have signalization. So those did come to fruition. But Steve's gonna talk here about the Bagot Lane Improvement Project that we've identified as part of our study.
Great, thank you. I'm sorry we didn't have them in the proper order on the sheet, so thank you for just making,
no problem. Thank you.
Making it work out.
My name is Steve Watkins. I'm the technical, or the chairman of the Technical Advisory Committee for the county, and specifically this project. Briefly, just want to talk about the dynamics of the North Highway 395 and then about this the paved truck bypass that we're talking about. You know, this reach of property is unlike a couple other areas in Oregon. It's, you know, 35 minutes from 250,000 people with higher than national average incomes per capita with a 7% sales tax of thereabouts. So we get a lot of traffic down Highway 395, you know, for commerce in the Hermiston area. And we'd like to develop this corridor so it can truly contribute to the area as an economic driver and not as a passenger, so to speak. So. And fundamentally, we need to control the traffic. There is no controls from Highway 730, 395 intersection all the way to Pumpkin Center, about 5 miles. It's not uncommon for vehicles and trucks to reach 70 miles an hour out on that road. It's very, very dangerous. And now specifically about the project that we want to propose forward, light at Bagot Lane is what we've been working with ODOT now for over a year. And our property owners have come to the conclusion that we need to, as a group, go ahead and pave our own public roads to help facilitate and hopefully move ODOT's interest in this signal forward. It's about 0.6 miles. We have to improve it to ag spec so they can withstand 80,000-pound trucks. But we're willing to do that as a property owners. If the county was to do it for us, it's well over $1 million. In addition to that, there are several trucking companies that share property along this road. They are Villarreal, Ramirez, Mendelez alone, 185 employees, Redaway, Sanitary Disposal, and there's also the Heller Refueling Station on this road that would be on that bypass. So when we say it's a truck route, we're going to mandate that the employees use that light to come on and off 395. But they're going to want to use it. Right now, it's so dangerous to get on and off that it's a dice roll. So we're that's our stake in the game. We're going to go ahead and do that, and we just hope that that'll move our project forward and we can get this thing started, and then we'll get into the rest of the things that we can do to help that stretch of 395 become productive.
Thank you so much.
Madam Co-Chair, Speaker Kotek, my name is Bill Elfring, County Commissioner, Umatilla County, and I just asked to be part of this so I can support our people here who are presenting this great project. I was in on this project from its very beginning. Well, maybe not its very beginning, but certainly from the time that citizen input created the project. That's what's really exciting about this project is that it is not a government project. It's a citizen project. It's being run by and propelled by the people who actually work and live in that particular area. It's an area that has not had a good history. Some of you may have heard the acronym FUMIO, F-U-M-I-O, but that which referred to that area. It's the five ugliest miles in Oregon. And our vow is to change that and to make it more beneficial and something that's very productive for our county. It came to me by one of the people who worked there, worked out in that area, said, can we work together to make something happen out here? And I said, absolutely, that's what we're for. That's what government's for, is to work together to make better things happen. And soon it was brought together into a committee. The committee took off, and this is the result of what they have done. Now, they said they don't have any real asks. There are some, but no dollar amount asks. But they will be coming back to you at a later date, talking more about specific dollars for traffic signalization and so on. We're looking currently at enhancement funding and immediate opportunity grants to move this ahead. Let me share one thing that I passed over really quickly when it was still being known as FUMIO, and to some extent today. The largest employers in Hermiston would not bring prospective recruits to town along that section of road because it created such an awful impression that people would say, is this what I'm moving into? I'm not sure we want it that way. Well, I can assure you that these people here have brought forth a project, and it's a project that will be done, and it will improve further than it already has the appearance and enhancement of that area. So thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Questions for this panel?
Yes, sir.
Very quickly, Madam Co-Chair, I would share with you that Commissioner Elfring, just so everyone knows, is also the chair of the Columbia Development Authority that oversees the management of the U.S. Army Depot.
Oh, very nice. Thank you, sir, for
Thank
your
you.
Work. Next up, we have Mr. Squires, Mr. Pelberg, and Mr. Aldrit, please.
Here comes another.
Eric Squires, Russ Pelberg, and David Aldrit. Thank you, gentlemen. Please, in any order you like.
Go first, please.
All right. Thank you for being here today. My name is Russ Pelberg. I am the city manager for the city of Umatilla. I did have some prepared remarks today, but I think we'll just wing it here a little bit. I came to Umatilla like a couple fish that were swimming up the Umatilla one day, or up the Columbia. They came past the city of Umatilla towards McNary. The first fish ran into a big concrete wall and turned around to his buddy and said, damn. And there they were. And I kind of came to Umatilla the same way. I was passing through and took a chance at a job there, and here I am. So short respect, I came from the Tri-Cities and was involved with a lot of transportation projects up there. I can see the potential down here for Umatilla and the region, and know it takes folks like you to make it happen. I'm very excited to partner with some of these projects that are happening around here. The previous project, the 395 corridor enhancement project that was just presented, the city of Umatilla is in support of that. Umatilla is not like any other small city in eastern Oregon. We're always having our hand out looking for money for these transportation projects. It is very helpful to partner with ODOT. Craig Sipp and his staff have just been absolutely wonderful to help us look for some additional funding on some of our projects that we want to tackle here in town. So as was stated earlier, you know, it's our local streets and roads that move a lot of the products and produce and stuff through our local communities to the west side of the state. And Umatilla, unfortunately, has some of the worst dilapidating roads around that I've seen. And it just goes from years of not being able to afford the maintenance and the funding to take care of those streets. So we're looking at various issues around town and partnering with ODOT, the state, and trying to secure some additional funding for some of our projects in our town. The governor indicated a transportation system is both safe and efficient, is key to a healthy community, and underpins a strong economy. And as I stated, having those good roads and infrastructure in place just highlights that for us. So I guess in closing, I came here today to ask the committee to follow the lead of surrounding states, Washington, Idaho, and Utah, that have seen great value in passing significant packages that made major investment in rural infrastructure and transportation projects that became game changers in those rural communities. So thank you for your time, effort, and commitment to looking at small communities, and to thank big as you guys move forward with this package. Thank you very much.
Great, thank you, sir. And please be sure to submit your written testimony, and then that will show up in the record as well. Welcome, sir.
Thank you. And thank you all for serving in public office. I am grateful for that. My written testimony has been submitted electronically.
Your name for the record, sir.
My name is Eric Squires, and I'm from Aloha, Oregon. I have electronic testimony that Mr. Brennan has kindly facilitated, and later you'll be able to read from the PowerPoint that I'm going to present. Aloha is an unincorporated community with no mayor to advocate for that, for those people. I'm not in that capacity, but I'm a known quantity there, and I'd like to just rapidly go through 10 bullet points of fixes that I think that we could execute statewide that apply to every corner of the state. The overarching concerns that I've got is that concurrency is missing, and as we grow as a state, we don't seem to be building the infrastructure in measure with the growth of people. We have a desperate need for capacity, and that's a theme that I've heard consistently throughout the testimony. Of the 10 fixes, one and two go hand in hand, and I would request that we do a performance audit of both ODOT and, in my neighborhood, TriMet. But I think Lane Transit District and every statewide every state affiliated transit agency could have a good look at how they deliver goods. For example, in my neck of the woods, we subsidize WES, the north-south commuter rail between Beaverton and Tualatin, to about $20 a ride, and I think we could put people in cabs cheaper. My third point is on system development charges, and embedded in that is traffic impact fees. In Washington County, we're wrestling with the math of about 28% of a traffic impact fee, and if we've got to the statewide mess of traffic problems, maybe the state might want to come in and suggest traffic impact fees are modulated to actually address the needs that occur when we build. I'd like to suggest that as working with our regional partners, Metro, that what seems to have gotten decoupled is land use and transportation. Senate Bill 100 tried to conjugate that. I'm dealing with an embarrassment in my neck of the woods. Some of the best farm soil in the state was the Reed Farm. Per acre, it produced more milk than any other place in Oregon, and we're turning that into South Hillsboro. We didn't protect that. And through Senate Bill 100, I thought we were going to conjugate the protection of soil with expansion of the urban growth boundary. So having our regional partners look at that again is a strong suggestion that I would make. Back to Metro, another suggestion is we're forced to use their black box Metro model. Our partners in Hillsboro have purchased their own micro model. So what that told them is that they needed 7 lanes to intersect TV Highway in Hillsboro. And that was kind of a surprise because Metro said, let's not do that. So the black box model that Metro uses is filled with assumptions that we can't really untangle at the citizen level. So I'd like to suggest that also in my neck of the woods, Orenco Station was planned as a transit-oriented development community. The Oregonian did an expose that said people weren't using a whole lot of transit despite putting them in a constrained area. And that the increase in transit was about 1% in the reduction. And
have to ask you to wrap up.
Then I'm going to just ask that you consider one last point, and that is Washington County has an amazing scenario. It's MSTIP, Major Streets Transportation Improvement Fund. And what that does is it builds concurrency. Every dollar raised goes to transportation. It's a model that I think would serve you well. Any questions, or am I excused?
Thank you so much. Are there questions? I see none.
Thank you.
You are excused. Thank you so much. Next up is Mr. Aldrit. I don't see. Okay, next, Bob Patterson, John Turner, and Blair, is it Larson or Lassen? Larson. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you. So I want to say thank you, Bob Patterson, Public Works Director, City of Pendleton, for your time being here. I really want to speak to the issue that not only do we have capacity issues for the City of Pendleton, but we really have ongoing preservation and maintenance issues. And we seriously lack funding in order to maintain the street utility infrastructure that we currently have in place. So again, we're asking that as you look at a transportation package, any help that you can give in that direction will really be a relief for the city and of great assistance for us.
Thank you.
John Turner, I'm the mayor-elect of Pendleton, and I've had the privilege of working with many of you previously in my previous life as president of Blue Mountain Community College. So, Madam Co-Chair and Speaker Kotek, thank you very much, all of you, for journeying out here to be with us today. We're very grateful. I had many things to say that have already been said more eloquently several times before, so I just want to give you one assurance. The City of Pendleton, and indeed all of the cities of Umatilla County, enjoy a very harmonious and cooperative relationship with our county, with the rail, with our port, with the users of the regional airport. And I want to pledge to you that we will do everything we can to make sure that every state dollar that's appropriated for projects out here will be used in an efficient manner that you would be proud of. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Fellow public servants, thank you for hearing from me. My name is Blair Larson. I'm the city manager of the city of Stanfield, which is just to the south of where we are now. You may think that you have heard from small towns already, but you really haven't. Stanfield has a population of about 2,000 people. And we've got US 395 going through Stanfield. It is our main street. It is called Main Street there. And it's five lanes wide. It is a massive freight corridor. And it's a blessing and a curse. For Stanfield, it's probably more of a curse than a blessing. We do appreciate that there is a lot of freight that moves through there that allows for a lot of jobs in the region. However, the quality of life in Stanfield does suffer because of that road. I just want to relate a story. A couple years ago, soon after I arrived in Stanfield, I was walking around with some consultants who were looking at who were putting together a report for us to see what we could do to improve our main street. We were talking across from the Main Street Market, and we observed an elderly woman crossing the street on a crosswalk, a marked crosswalk, with a cane, walking across the street, and a car speeding by knocked her cane out of her hand. It was that close to her. We have a major problem with safety along that road. The ODOT does a great job maintaining the road itself, but when it comes to pedestrian facilities, it is very lacking. We have a number of improvements that we would like to do that would really control this corridor in a better way. And fortunately, the funding is just not there. We've applied for our project has been submitted to ODOT along with many, many others. As you know, ODOT just does not have the funding necessary to meet all the needs that are out there. But it wouldn't take that much. Bumping out the curbs a little bit, making it feel like a corridor was a little bit narrower, even though you could maintain the same number of travel lanes, all those would make a huge difference, especially in the lives of Stanfield citizens who currently, many of them, will get in a car and drive two blocks just to avoid walking across US 395. That is not a sustainable model for a community, and it's not a sustainable model for businesses in the community. The economic impact of having a real walkable Main Street would be huge, because right now people avoid it. So I want to encourage you to not forget about the little guys. Right now there is a special city allotment that ODOT does that's specifically targeted at communities under 5,000 population. That's only $50,000 a year if you get it. Stanfield hasn't had one for several years. It goes around, and when it's available, we make use of it. But I'm sorry, but $50,000 is probably enough to do maybe 50 feet of pavement, if that. Probably not even that. You know, it's really a pittance compared to what is really necessary. I wish I could show you the pictures of Stanfield before US 395 was widened. It was a beautiful street, two lanes, big trees on either side. Those trees are gone now. They've been taken down to make room for the roadway. And it's just not a walkable community anymore. So the need is great. Our resources are few. We do get some state funding from gas tax. We used to have a gas tax of our own until the local fueling station threatened to leave. There's just not enough funding out there. There needs to be something done to really have not only, you know, a lot of infrastructure improvements have been talked about today, but, you know, not only do those need to be funded, those are one-time expenses, but there needs to be some mechanism in place for consistent funding, because maintenance, we just don't do maintenance because we can't afford it. We have crumbling streets that are impossible to maintain in the state that they are. They've been delayed. The maintenance has been delayed to the point that replacement is almost the only option. And of course, that's far more expensive than maintaining it. So something consistent that can continue year after year and provide enough revenue to actually do real maintenance is very important, especially when for cities like ours, our property taxes have been severely constrained. We have almost none. So please do what you can. I'm not in your... I don't envy your position. I'm not in your shoes. There are really hard decisions to be made, and I don't know where the money's going to come from, but I do know where it needs to go. So thank you very much.
Sir, your last point is well taken, and you drew the lucky straw. Patrick forgot to turn on the timer, so.
I was wondering about
one
that.
One good thing happened to you today.
Adam.
Yes, Senator Johnson.
A question for you. We're visitors to your community, but some of us drove through Stanfield on our way down here and by extension to the powerhouse that is the Port of Morrow. Have you talked at all about the businesses that traverse Stanfield? And if you suddenly now bulb out downtown, you make it a walkable downtown, and that becomes the constriction point for all the traffic that's headed to your key economic driver, which is the port. And I just don't know how those relationships have worked themselves out, and if you've explored other alternatives than to just say we want to dress up Main Street. My question is, at what cost to the shippers and the economic drivers that are using the port?
That's a very good point, and those issues may seem like they're mutually exclusive, but they are not. If you drive down towards Stanfield and you're driving down the hill into Stanfield, you see a very wide street. It gives a visual cue to the driver to go as fast as they want. We're not suggesting that the travel lanes be changed. We are suggesting that the city give up some parking areas to bulb out into those parking areas, and then in certain targeted areas, there be a median by the park. Other improvements that would make the road feel narrower without actually changing the travel lanes. As a driver, visual cues are huge for you. That it tells you a lot about how fast you're going and whether you need to slow down and watch out for pedestrians. When you add street furniture, when you add these bumped out curbs, when you add something that makes the corridor feel narrower visually, that signals the driver to slow down, and it makes the community more walkable. So that is really what we're proposing. It would not change the freight traffic that goes through, and actually it wouldn't even change the speed of the freight traffic, because we're not even proposing that the speed limit be changed. We're simply proposing that there be improvements made to visually make it better, which again affects driving behavior.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you, gentlemen. Next up, I would like to call Michael Weimer and Steve Kramer, please. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you for coming out to Eastern Oregon. I'm Michael Weimer from Gillam County. I'm commissioner there, and I wear a number of hats. I have a 6,000-acre farm in the middle of Gillam County, and I'm also on the supervisor for the county road department, for the roadmaster, and I'm also on the board of the Lower John Day Area Commission on Transportation. And I'm also the co-chair of the Association of Oregon Counties Transportation Steering Committee. And so I've seen a few of you just recently.
Yes, you have.
and I left my hearing aids home too. I hope you haven't. I think the real thing I want to talk to you today about, though, is our road budget for Gillam County, because we're a small county in terms of population, less than 2,000 people, but we have over 400 miles of county road. And of that, only about a quarter of it is asphalt. And so with the funding that comes from state and federal dollars amounts to about $460,000. And part of that is in what they call the small counties allotment that was a special deal that was put together for basically originally for Sherman and Gillam counties because we did not have any timber money. And over time here with the change in the federal landscape and whatnot, the formula that was set up for that small county allotment, a number of counties ended up in there, and so the dollars that we were getting, say, at $250,000 at one time, is the last year it was only $95,000, and it goes up and down depending on how many different counties fall into the formula. So that dollar number is not very significant anymore. The other part, since we are a small population, we have very few registered vehicles, and that's what really determines our fuel tax dollars that we receive. And so that amount then comes in at like $216,000. So the other third part of our federal and state dollars is the state fund exchange dollars, and we have to take those and collect them over several years before we have enough money to do a project like a chip seal project, just because that our budget is so small. We have about a 10-man crew that does the roads, and we also crush rock too. And my 3 minutes is already up.
Sir, I'm sorry. Do you have a one-sentence wrap-up for us?
What's that?
Do you have a one-sentence wrap-up for us?
It's a wrap-up?
Wrap it up.
Quick wrap-up.
Okay, $2 billion package, I think, is something we got. We got to look at a big package. Mm-hmm. And that's looking at it from the big picture, because the big counties and the little counties, We need some money, and so that's what I really want to emphasize here.
Right.
And I'll be seeing you again.
I'm sure. Thank you, sir. Welcome.
Madam Co-Chair, Mr. Co-Chair, Madam Speaker, my representative, Mr. Smith, members of the committee, thank you for taking on this monumental task. My name is Steve Kramer, Wasco County Commissioner, just been reelected in the May primary for my second term. My first year in office, we tackled our infrastructure problem. We put together a 14-member task force from the community, and we went to work on taking care of our own roads. through those, we had a 14-member group for the 14-months project. We were successful in committing five of our cities. One of our cities abstained, and our constituents were not behind us. We failed. We tried desperately to do this on our own, but so I'm here today with you. I've given you the summary of our work group, and we've this year committed to through succession planning. We're hiring three new folks, and because of materials are down in cost right now, we're going to up we're going to up our chip seal this year, back up to the 30 miles. We're presently doing the 12 to 15, so we're not going to keep up. So that's why we're here. We're here to offer any help that we can through what we've done in our small county to you, the committee, to help further this monumental task of the transportation problem that we have. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Are there questions for this panel? Gentlemen, thank you so much for being here. We have one final panel. I think we'll just invite all four up. Don Russell, Patty Glaze, Jerry, I'm not going to get this right.
Number one economic activity in Gillian County.
Imsland?
Portland's garbage.
The Imsland, there you go. And Mary Jo Carpenter. We have four chairs, so just come on up and have a seat.
Huge. It is.
Welcome to our committee.
But it has to get there.
By truck, which is a waste. It should be by rail or barge.
See that.
Who do you want to start?
In any order you like.
My name is Jerry Emsland, real estate appraiser, Pendleton, Oregon, also a real estate broker. Went to a little school called Shemakata down in Salem. I was raised on a ranch over in Wallowa County, born down in Lakeview. So covered all corners of the state.
Have. I didn't hear the coast mentioned. Come
yes,
on now.
I'm going there this 4th of July.
Okay, you're forgiven.
Okay.
Thank you.
There you go.
You can follow me home.
So before my minutes start, Kim Pusey, I was worried that he was going to miss President Eisenhower. And so back in the 60s, when the big project came with the interstate coming through, my uncle was actually one of the engineers that worked on part of it between Pendleton and Boardman, one of the state. And some of the other projects down at Cairo Junction, I was involved in the appraisal on some of that for the state on some of the condemnation cases, Interstate 84 to 82. I worked on portions of that, so I'm familiar with a little bit on access. What we're here today to talk about is a parcel of ground that's at Interchange 210 in Pendleton, commonly referred to as where the Red Lion is up there in Pendleton. It's a unique piece of property, and there was a couple of brothers that their names were Reese, and the Reese brothers owned that parcel back in the 60s, and they had a son and a daughter, and the other brother had another daughter too, and those three people now own that property. One of them you may be familiar with is Adjutant General Fred Reese, retired, who is now back in the Pentagon under private contract. Anyway, we have this piece of property here, and it was originally intended to be the main access off of the new interstate that was coming to Pendleton to lead into the city center. And what we ended up with was a little tiny street called Kirk Extension, and that was permitted, but now it does not comply with any of the state rules. So what we have is between Highway 11 leading to Milton Freewater and Walla Walla, out to a little deal called Goad Road, which is only an overpass, on out to the next exit that's between Pendleton and the casino. And here we have no access to 100 and some acres that has good frontage on the highway, and we can't get to it. And so what we're going to be bringing to you, and we want you to be aware of it, is we need to provide, work with ODOT and figure out how we're going to get access into that. The state has shut us off of using the existing Kirk Street that was put in there a number of years ago. So anyway, just to highlight, here we have, we're topographically handicapped in Pendleton, and anytime you go down through there, you'll see the bedrock to work with or anything. Up on top, we have 100 and some acres on the north side. We have another 20 or 30 acres on the south side that I'm not worried about. But we're going to be coming to you and visiting a little bit more about this 100 acres on the north. And then Patty will talk to you a little bit more about it.
You hold on.
She emerges from behind the sign.
Yeah.
Thank you. There you go.
I'd like to point out just a little bit. My name is Patty Glaze. I'm hi, Greg. I see one person I know. Nice to see you. I've been a real estate broker for over 31 years. I was born and raised. My only real association with ODOT was my father was a maintenance employee for the state of Oregon for a good 35 years, so I know all about that. But this property is owned by the Reese family. It's privately owned. There is 108 acres. We don't need a rezone. We've got the utilities. We don't have access. That's our problem. We do not have access. The first two or three lots there are zoned commercial. And also the balance of the land is in what Pendleton calls the overlay zoning area. What that means is they're open to development. We can push the commercial out for further use. Goat Road, the bridge, the overpass there, I have been told was built back in the 60s. It may not hold the capacity for the traffic to bring the commercial onto that property. I'm going to go into the project that I have been working on that Costco, as you may have heard, decided not to come to Pendleton about the end of 2015, but we worked with them for about a year and a half to 2 years. All of their real estate development team, including the Jeff Brotman, who's the president and started Costco, came to Pendleton and visited. We met several times. They had three sites that they zeroed in on, and our privately owned site was right on top of the one of the choices that they had. They had the kind of money to bring forward and cause some interest and action to this property. Anderson Perry, Brad Baird, helped us out quite a bit, and I really appreciate that. He actually, his company actually made this map for our presentation to you and to Costco, actually. But Costco was going to site in this right over here, the first two tax lots. And this is how the building and the parking was going to go. This is their design, not mine.
With 300 employees.
Yes. And you can see this this area right here. The only way we can get in is to drop down here. We have control of all of this property, including this, is to drop clear down here. And we're short about 225 feet to then bring an angle back up in. One thought that we've had is, should they come back to us? One thought we've had, if you're driving from LeGrand to Pendleton, right in here, start watching that berm. That berm could be cut off and an off-ramp drop you right onto that property. This is some of the only privately owned property that's zoned commercial for any type of use in Pendleton right now. We were competing with the tribe and their economic park, and we were competing with another private owner who Costco ended up saying didn't even, that one wouldn't fit their criteria. The other reason they looked at this is Highway 11 goes to Walla Walla County. There's a 60,000 plus demographic.
Ma'am, I'll need to have you wrap up now. Thank you.
What, am I done?
Yeah.
I'm done. Okay. So you can see our problem.
Thank you.
We need access.
You need access.
Yes.
Questions?
Got it.
All right.
Thank you. For the phone.
Please.
Go ahead.
Sure.
Hello? Okay.
It's on.
That was a small demonstration of how quickly on the fly we work together here in Eastern Oregon.
Nicely done.
And I know I talked, and thank you for letting us join you for lunch. I'm Mary Jo Carpenter. I am with Community Connection of Northeast Oregon, and my offices are in Baker City. I'm a county manager there. We are a transportation provider, an area agency on aging, and a community action agency. And in our La Grande area, we run a kids' summer program. Anyway, don't forget my light. My timer.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, Patrick. Getting... Twice in one day.
For days. Just ask anybody.
Very close to the end of the meeting.
You're a very honest woman. Thank you. So anyway, thank you all for being here, and thanks for all the help from Representative Smith and, of course, Representative Benz, and I'll send him my bill later. Anyway, I know I will make it quick. I won't take up my 3 minutes. Part of what I do in my work is I'm a member of the Public Transit Advisory Committee and a member of OTA. So I've been in transportation now. I've been in my job for 29 years. When I started with our little transit service, we were a senior bus. We had a part-time driver. We had a Title V part-time receptionist, the county manager, and myself, the assistant manager. And through the support of the federal funding and the state funding and the special transportation fund, our transportation service has grown to where we now have, I use about 8 drivers, but we have 3 routes that we are running every day. One fixed route, which is kind of odd for a community of 10,000. It's just unheard of, really, but it works. Our public transportation became very necessary for our people. But the one thing I wanted to point out is, you know, we always say we want more money. But I want to tell you about the characteristic of what I've noticed in our service is that when I mentioned that we had our one driver and our one 80-year-old volunteer driver who we called in once a week because we might have to transport a person who uses a wheelchair twice a week. Now, in our everyday paratransit service, we are transporting 6 to 8 to 10, you know, out of our 10% of our rides. More than 10% of our rides are persons in wheelchairs or with other mobility devices. We have people using walkers and those scooters that, you know, and so this makes us look less efficient because, you know, the data shows that a typical dial-a-ride should be able to do 4 rides per hour, and we used to make 6 or 8 rides an hour because our town is small. And now we're back down to about that. But so just recognize that the numbers don't always tell the tale, and I'm sure that if we are experiencing this and it's happening more and more, then others are too. We also transport for our 2 assisted living facilities, so we are doing... you know, partnering in those ways. So those are kind of critical things. Just quickly, I didn't think I'd take that long. just quickly, yes, of course, we want you to create a wonderful transportation package for us, including support for public transportation. It really does, it's critical in our rural areas. And I really just...
And I'll need you to wrap up now.
Okay, my wrap up is the very interesting idea I heard and I liked as a taxpayer is I kind of like that idea of the mileage based registration fee as a moneymaker. I think it would be worth checking into. And lastly, you have a wonderful ODOT department. I work with them a lot and they're doing a great job for you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Russell, I think you are our final panelists today. You're in an esteemed position.
We often save the best for last in Eastern Oregon.
There you go.
So, my name is Don Russell. I'm the junior commissioner at Morrow County. Come January 9th, I will become the senior commissioner at Morrow County.
Congratulations.
I don't know if that's good or bad, but retirements and elections have results, I guess.
I will when I need to.
My background before I became a commissioner at Morrow County, I was 10 years a commissioner with the Port of Morrow. It's my understanding that after this meeting, you're going to take a trip and look at the 2 regional ports in the area, Umatilla and Morrow.
Ready.
I am
I hope that you will be impressed with the work that both Kim Pusey and Gary Neal have done. I know that I am, and we're pretty proud of these two regional ports. I used to call Kim Pusey the best-dressed man in the room every time I was at a meeting with Kim. Now he's the casualest-dressed man in the room, I guess. My background before this little bit of public service, I was in the petroleum industry, a jobber, regional jobber in Northeast Oregon. And you've heard a lot of requests for needs and ideas for needs for the transportation system here in this area, and that's not going to be unique to the state of Oregon. How do we pay for it? You know, the easy fix is raise the gas tax and raise the weight mile tax. When I was in business, we had trucks that were interstate and intrastate, and we also collected the gas tax for the state of Oregon. For me as a petroleum jobber, collection of the gas tax for the state of Oregon was positive cash flow. My suppliers, whether it was British Petroleum or Shell Oil Company or Tesoro Corporation or Chevron, their terms were net 10 days. They did electronic funds transfer, and so in 10 days, the money was gone out of my account. The state of Oregon allowed me to pay them by mail as long as the postage stamp was marked on the 25th of the following month. So I got anywhere from 55 to 25 days to pay that same bill that the petroleum guys took in 10 days. So for me, it was positive cash flow. I could roll a petroleum or 10,000 gallons of gasoline, a tanker load of gasoline, in about 3 days at an average service station. So it's positive cash flow. I always felt personally that the weight mile tax was the most fair, but it's not the easiest to manage. Gas tax is easy. You know, I'll bet you, well, I know that in the 80s and 90s when electronic notification came in, prior to that, the price of gasoline changed rarely because your sales rep for the particular oil company had to call you before he went home for the day and tell you that the price of gas was going to go up. So that, you know, we'd get notification on a Friday at 3 o'clock in the afternoon that the price of gas was going to change at midnight. It would be somewhere between 3 o'clock and 5 o'clock in the afternoon. With the electronic technology that we have now, price of gasoline changes almost hourly. You know, don't be afraid of a large gas tax increase. Oregon's pretty fair compared to the surrounding states. We need to remember that this is a statewide transportation system, that problems in the Portland metropolitan area are problems in eastern Oregon. We used to, at the Port of Morrow, be the second largest inland container dock in North America, and now there is no end line for the containers that are shipped out of the Port of Morrow, so they go by rail or by truck to Tacoma and Seattle because T6 doesn't have steamship transportation anymore. I see my time's up. There's a lot of things that I could talk to you about, but when I became a commissioner for the county, we're members of the Association of Oregon Counties, and I put myself on the Transportation Committee and became a member of the OASIS board. I thought that maybe my background could lend some help, and so I'm here to help you pass a transportation package and do whatever I can. Thank you.
Sir, thank you for your comments. And I just would note that this process is going to unfold for quite some time. So this will not be your last opportunity to speak to us or to give us input. We have the rest of our visits across the state through the summer. As the legislative session unfolds next February, I'm certain that this bill will not happen the first few weeks of the session. In fact, it could happen late in the session. We will be holding hearings for some time through the session. So this is only your first opportunity to tell us what you think. But we're delighted to be here today. Thank you, panel. Are there questions for this panel?
I would just say thank you for being here in the beginning.
So. Yeah, we have a long way to go. Thank you, Madam Speaker. Is there any, we have just a couple of minutes left. Is anyone in the audience just inclined to jump up and address us that didn't sign up? This is what we received on our sheet, but if there's anyone else who would like to take just a moment or two to address us, please come forward.
So, Madam Co-Chair, can I just share the quickest of thoughts?
Yes.
If If I could summarize the comments you've heard from the citizens of District 57, it is that public sector investment leads to private sector investment. And there's a great model to be seen in District 57.
Thank you, sir. Sir, did you want a minute? We'll give you your 3 minutes if you'd like, sir.
Thank you, Representative Smith, Co-Chair. My name's Aaron Palmquist. I'm the city manager of Irrigan, and we had lunch together, but so the rest of the public can hear, and I want to say thank you for being legislators, because and you're here. You've got a lot of patience, because there's been a lot of ask and not a lot of how can we fix this. It's probably 10 to 0.5 of people. So here's, I'm going to give you some so that the rest of the public that wasn't part of our lunch. One of them that Joe Fernell said, get the our IT, our internet, and our technology as part of a transportation package so that we can have people that can remote and telecommute. I think there's a way to get some funding out of that to get into the package. A gas tax part of it, but here's the big one. A story from Irrigan. 3 years ago, I came to Irrigan. We were debt to income 70%. Today, 3 years later, we're 35 to 40. How did we do that? It's called cutting expenses. You can't always go after more money. You've got to streamline processes and systems, and that might be personnel. The biggest thing that transportation has is what? I'm one of them. It's called PERS. It's going to get ugly. We've got to get smarter and leaner. We can't just make the animal bigger. So those three things, get your technology, do some gas tax because we can't use it all. But the big thing is we got to cut, stop taking, start giving. And that's all of us as government employees. Great. That's all I have, Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate it very much. Patrick, would you like to give us just a little update on our next event?
Yes, Madam Chair. We do not meet again until July 20th, so we have a few weeks before then. That meeting on July 20th will be in the city of Eugene at University of Oregon.
Good. So stay tuned. We have a long way to go, folks. Thank you so much for being here today. We greatly appreciate your hospitality. Thank you to this beautiful, beautiful high school facility. I'm jealous of your high school facility. And to Representative Bence and Representative Smith, thank you so much for your wonderful hospitality the last couple of days. Any final comments from the panel? Yes, sir.
Madam Chair, I just want to defend ODOT, and Paul knows I don't do that very often, but ODOT is in fact working on the resiliency issues. They've been on it a while. Paul's familiar with the latest request to have support for us, and then Patrick, thank you, sent out some of the basic raw data, so on and so forth, so that after, as we get to deliberations in mid-November, that we will have that information that we need to make those decisions.
Thank you. We are adjourned. Thank you all.